Hello, just before this episode begins, there will be a brief discussion during our talk about Nell about sexual assault and rape. So just a heads up.
Okay, don't say anything funny. Give me 1 minute.
Don't laugh at not being funny. Stupid.
That is in and of itself funny. Do the thing since it's your episode?
Yes, I do. And I'm going to do it now. Welcome to Your Inner Child is an Idiot, the podcast where we look back on things from our childhood and wonder if they were any good to begin with. My name's Damon.
I'm DJ. Good job.
Thank you.
It felt like a fly swatter coming to my face. Ooh.
It also felt like I was sliding down a hill like Mario in Mario 3. You know, I told you earlier that I was debating between two movies.
Yes.
Depending on my mood, I have one that's a good movie, presumably, and one that is allegedly a lesser movie.
Okay.
But because of our tiff during our last recording session, I am going with the movie that I would presume to be bad.
The tiff where you lied to the camera's face.
Yes, and the microphones. Did we ever confirm that I lied or was it mistaken?
I'll check the tape.
Please do.
Yeah.
So my movie.
This is very important.
My movie, I will say this, we have watched it together before.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite movie experiences with you.
Okay.
But it is not a good movie, but watching you watch said movie is one of my favorite experiences in cinema history.
Are we finally watching Tay and a Wee, the movie?
We are watching Tay and a Wee, : The Nell Story, 1994, because there was a 1968 version.
Oh, was there really?
No, I made that up. There is no 1968 movie titled Tay and the Wee, : The Nell Story.
This is great. I'm very excited to watch this. We're talking about Nell, the movie.
Correct.
Nell, starring Jodie Foster. And I'm excited to watch this. I realize that the people that are listening to this have that in their title of their podcast. They know what we're talking
It's no
about.
Surprise to them. It's called dramatic irony, when the audience knows something that the actors do not.
Oh, I'm an actor.
Sure.
Now. Very excited.
So this is a 1994 movie. My first experience with this movie was watching it yet again in the godforsaken psychology class in my high school, because coach wanted to take a day off. So we had to write psychological profiles on the people there. And I think this is also centered around a group of psychologists who encounter Nell, who is what you hear about these occasionally, who is a feral child or a wild woman who speaks in
the twin language that she had with her.
Whoa,
sister,
spoiler
right?
alert, man.
Isn't
that is the twist at the end. She had a twin language, but she also learned English from her mother or the matriarch, who had a deep Southern accent and also had a stroke. So everything she says is like removed several. The way she learned English is just so fraught. I remember this movie from that class and being like, wow, I love legitimate cinema. And I was a teenager and dumb. And then I watched it with you. I stumbled upon it, I think, on just cable. And it's, first off, it's the type of movie I would categorize, it's Oscar bait. It definitely feels like everyone is trying to get an award, but it's so flop sweaty in that attempt for an awards grab that it just makes you uncomfortable. On top of which, Nell is this weird. Actually, let's talk about when you saw this. What made you, because watching you watch Nell is one of my favorite memories, because you were so not just mentally repulsed, physically repulsed, like you were trying to get further away, as deep into the couch and away from the TV as you could.
I just want to say, as a side note, I'm just glad that as a society and year of our Lord 2024, we have moved beyond just blatant Oscar bait movies. Maestro. And so I'm really
glad. It could
glad
win for makeup as long as they stay perfectly still and the camera doesn't move.
As long as someone who votes in the Academy didn't watch the movie, yeah, they could win. So I don't remember exactly what repulsed me, because I've tried to think as little about this movie as possible since I saw it.
I have a theory, but if you don't want to,
I feel like there's a lot of like visceral touching things. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's like specifically feet, but you know what I mean? Just a lot of like,
well, hands like, are the feet of the arms.
They are. They really are. Just like face touching and like weird faces. Cause she, if I remember this, Jodie Foster portraying Nell is experiencing when she kind of gets pulled into society is experiencing it in a very visceral way. Like it's very like physically damaging to her to just be in this world.
Right. She is completely lived outside of society. And then Liam Neeson, is that correct? That can't be right. Liam Neeson of Taken
Leslie
fame?
Nielsen. Leslie Nielsen is the...
dramatic no, turn. Is it? No, I think it is Liam Neeson of The Gray. And he I think really his does. Late wife, Natasha Richardson, is also in this. Oh, did I ruin... Were you going to do a joke?
I was going to do a joke because I was going to say he really does have a specific set of skills.
I now, think what makes...
Had to bring up that he's a widower.
What makes me uncomfortable about Nell is that she is very childlike in the movie, but also very sexual in the way she touches people. At one point, she goes naked swimming and Liam Neeson like watches her without her consent, I believe. And I feel like that mix of like it feels sexual yet also childlike is very repugnant.
Yeah.
Off-putting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to talk about this. I'll say this. There is a trope in Oscar Beatty movies about people who are neurodivergent that they always go for a scene where they have an episode, where they have sort of a semi-violent episode. And I always find it very uncomfortable and condescending and it's obnoxious. And I feel like this movie will have that.
Is the character of Nell, I guess we'll find out in the movie, but like, is she portrayed as being neurodivergent or just having grown up in that?
I mean, I think technically she would be neurodivergent. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that definition would work. I don't think there's anything like diagnosable with her. I think it's just that she's a feral person. She has lived outside of society and sort of lived off the land, and she is not used to being around people, and she's lived in the deep wilderness, and I think they take her to the city at some point, so... Buckle up.
Turns out to be Will Ferrell's daughter.
That's what they mean by a feral child, is that Will Ferrell has been spreading his seed all around this country, and it's time to put a stop to it.
He's like younger than Jodie Foster.
I think, yes, that would be true.
That'd be weird. I am not looking forward to this, but also I am looking forward to... talking about
I almost feel like it should be an episode we watch together, because what's the point of watching Nell by yourself when you could watch it with DJ? But I want you to sit in front of me while you watch it, so I can just sort of peer around your shoulder, or just maybe, hold a mirror while you're watching it.
We'll put a poll up. Maybe this can be a special patron live stream of it'll just be a camera on me. You won't see what part of the
movie. Oh, like a Ghost Hunters episode where you have this contraption on you and you're like, you're also for some reason in night vision. your pupils are bright green.
I'm going to have a GoPro just on the edge of my popcorn bowl. So you just see a diminishing mound of popcorn in my face.
And the popcorn falling out of your mouth.
Yeah.
He eats it like Cookie Monster.
We, unfortunately, are going to watch Nell. Watch along with us. We'll be back after these messages from us. Before we get into the second half of the show, I just want to say we have a survey that you can fill out and help us learn more about you and your preferences. So please go there and click the link in the description. You'll get an episode, our 2023 recap episode, that you can't get anywhere else. So fill out the survey. What? You can't. It's true.
No, that's true. But I mean, I also don't know of many places you can get these regular episodes.
Well, you can't get it on our feed?
That's true.
Not
you
even
cannot.
On, you have to fill out the survey to get this episode and we'll send it to you. Once you fill it out, it should take you just a few minutes. Don't worry about it. Just take it.
Fucking take it.
Just take it.
Take it.
I think one thing I want to do with this podcast
that
we can learn from the movie Nell is seamless product placement. Mm-hmm. So instead of doing our usual, like, just... stop the podcast. Let's tell you about our Patreon page at patreon.com/innerchildsandidiot.
Of course.
Instead, we're just going to kind of...
too clunky.
Yeah, we're going to kind of like just sneak it into conversation. So you do that.
What? Oh, okay. Hey, DJ, my friend.
Oh, hey, Are you playing Damon?
Yeah, I didn't see you walk in and put headphones on and set up these mics.
Yes, and I did, though.
I was just the other day looking at internet pornography. And, you know, that moment after you're done viewing it and you're just kind of like in a malaise. And I just looked at
the shame spiral.
Spiral where you just grab your Bible. When I opened my Bible,
the word of the Lord,
a little index card came out.
Oh,
and this is the best seamless product placement I can do. I had written a URL on that index card in the Bible.
Sure.
And that index card was your inner child is at aneat.com or www.patreon.com/your inner child is an idiot. Chef's choice. That was written on the index card too, which is weird. And when I typed it in, I was given the option to donate to this very podcast that I'm on.
You were whisked away to a Saturday morning as a kid, supporting your local
watching
podcast.
Nell as a kid, because I was too old for cartoons, and so I would always watch the Saturday morning showing of Nell that NBC always
at
did.
At the Nickelodeon.
It was, you can't do that on television, Nell, and then 3 hours of cat talk.
You said on Nickelodeon. I was saying like at the Nickelodeon. Yeah, I went back a little too far, I think.
You're right. You had me putting nickels into a Nickelodeon. Understandable. But that's all I got to say. Anyway, let's go about our business. We haven't done anything uncomfortable or weird because we're just having a conversation.
This is
like
just seamless. I'm not going to, it's not like I'm looking at the camera saying patreon.com/your inner child is an idiot. Support the show if you can, if you want to.
Yeah. But you're looking at me.
But I'm
in
this.
Friends,
I wouldn't do that. We're just having a conversation. Yeah. I'm buzz no marketing. We're buzz no marketing each other. Here. We're buzzing each other, as we would say.
Yeah, just two friends buzzing each other.
Perfect. We're back. We watched Nell.
I got an immediate ear itch. Okay. We can keep that. It adds to our charm. But from the cans.
Oh, just
from
having
the headphones. Not from like a worm.
I thought
one of those Wrath of Khan worms that goes into your ear.
My voice isn't too loud. Is it okay?
No, it's okay? Fine. All right. Stop being, you're a white man. Talk as loud as you want.
You're right. I was
talk over Nell and every other woman who's trying to have a conversation with you.
Like Dr. Lovell, I was put on this earth to take up space.
And you did.
And I shall. We watched Michael Apted's Nell.
Correct. 1994's Nell. 1994 didn't direct it. Michael Apted did. Yes. I didn't want you to think that 1994 directed it and it came out in the year of Michael Apted.
Yeah, that would be really confusing. I suppose this is your recap, so I'm going to let you ahead and take this one.
Thank you for circling. Yes, Nell. Picture this. Nell is the story of a woman who... I could use a lot of validation as I go. She's a
woman.
We don't
find out how she identifies in the film. So
that's true. She
already
never
off
makes
to a
it
bad
clear.
Start.
She doesn't specify her pronouns.
Nope.
She is a woman who lives in rural Appalachia in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And her mother died, who she lived with for her whole life. Now she's out on her own. She's discovered by the boy who delivers groceries to her house, and that causes a flurry of activity where Liam Neeson, the localist doctor, because, I mean, she doesn't really live in a town. He discovers her, and he realizes that she's completely separate from society, and then he reports her to a mental hospital in Charlotte.
Yeah.
And they want to get their hands on her, their grubby little sciencey hands all over Nell, ruin her. Sully her with civilization. So Natasha Richardson, she comes out to investigate Nell, and they're just sort of watching her. A court has ordered that they have 3 months to see if she is self-sustaining and can live by herself. Wouldn't you know it, Nell charms them in a lot of ways, teaches them about the ways of Nell's life, and then they fall in love with each other. But wouldn't you know it, evil science gets in the way, tries to kidnap Nell. They take her to their grubby little hospital where only bad things can happen, where they are going to open theme parks, release Funko Pops of Nell. They're going to have t-shirts with Nell's catchphrases, Chickabay, Tay, and the Ween, TM right after it.
Right.
So you knew that you can't reprint that without her express permission. Anyway, there's a trial and Nell gives a spirited, if indecipherable, defense of herself, and the judge rules, gavel, 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 Nell is free to live her life, and she lives on the separatist state of Nell, make Nell great again.
Yeah.
And that's the story of Nell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we learned that it was the Nell inside us all along that helped us become good Nells.
We have knelt together.
I feel like that's in my top 10 of recaps.
That was pretty good.
Which is a low bar.
That was pretty good. This, I think we've watched harder to recap films of late, I feel like, that are just kind of like a mishmash. This does, if I'm just going to go ahead and start heaping praise on this movie, which will be a theme of the episode. It does have a pretty coherent plot as these things go, which is nice. I think it's a nice change of pace.
I gotta hand it to Nell. Oh, it's got an act one and act two, and dare I even say, act three.
And we did have an intermission.
We had an intermission. The guy came out in the cape, and he had a little xylophone to tell us to get back to our seats, which I appreciated that you hired him to do that.
Before we get into the movie proper, I just want to say that the reason that you chose this movie, we talked about it in the intro, so I don't want to say a ton more, but...
You don't want to spoil the part that people have already listened to.
Right.
Go back and listen to the first part that you already created.
Well, I don't want to just like make them re-listen to it, but it makes me very uncomfortable, this movie.
Yes.
That continues to be the case in this watching.
I was so scared that you wouldn't be uncomfortable when we rewatched it, and I'm so happy to report.
Not a problem.
You were just as uncomfortable.
And just as a treat, as a little treat for our audience, we set up a DJ cam. So I don't know what I'm going to do with that yet. That footage.
I can't wait to find out.
But we're going to probably try to work it in somehow.
Great.
Just want you to know.
I saw from an opposite angle that you will see it on the DJ cam, but if the left side of his face is as good as the right side of his face, you're in for a treat. When you got uncomfortable by now, was that about 30 minutes into the movie, 20 minutes into the movie? What would you say?
Literally, what I wrote in my notes here is immediately... Just the word immediately underscored. It begins with Nell singing the theme song of Nell. My goal is to
Nell's theme.
Do zero Nell impressions for this episode. So I'm not going to do it.
Even though it's not, she's not a protected class of people as the Supreme Court would rule, it still feels uncomfortable to impersonate.
It feels wrong. It feels like, you remember when we were talking about Napoleon Dynamite and it was like, are we?
It feels wrong to do. I'm not going to make the promise that I won't do any Nell impressions, but I just want you to know that when I do those Nell impressions, I feel bad.
So, congratulations, everyone.
So, I guess I'm having it both ways.
This is based on a play, which I didn't know, Idioglossia.
Yes.
Which is apparently a term, according to Wikipedia, I've been doing my research hardcore in that I looked up Wikipedia.
You were looking up vaccines and the origins of Nell.
Yeah. And just doing my own research. And the word idioglossia, it refers to something that like what happens to Nell. She has like her own idiosyncratic language because of her upbringing or her situation.
Specific, yeah.
So, yeah. The guy from Lost comes in. Michael Faraday from Lost comes up and he's delivering groceries. This came up a lot in this movie. He just ride his little moped into the wilderness. Mm-hmm. And basically, they have this situation where the mom, I can't remember, Mrs.
Nell Sr.
Yeah. We did find out her last name.
Kelty. Mrs. Kelty.
Mrs. Kelty leaves money out and then they bring her groceries because otherwise she is untethered to society. There's no running water.
And he doesn't even bring it to the door. He leaves it like on a rock out in her front yard.
Yeah.
You can call it that.
But he hears Nell kind of like crying or making noise, and it's because Mrs. I already forgot her name.
Kelty.
2 seconds
Mrs.
ago.
Mrs. Kelty.
I'm going to go ahead and write that down.
Yeah, go ahead and put that in your notes.
Mrs. Kelty has died, and Nell is upset. And so he comes in, and now that's what kind of sets the whole ball in motion. But we do get the first appearance of oatmeal in that scene. And I do think that is one of the more important things that happens.
For me, definitely. Oatmeal is a great source of
riboflavin.
LPL cholesterol, is that the good cholesterol? I can't remember. But it's good if you have high cholesterol, you want to lower your cholesterol, have some oatmeal in the morning. Put some fruit in there.
I don't know, and I actually really should because now I'm in my 40s.
I also really should because my doctor told me I should. I'm just going to eat the oatmeal. I don't know what the good cholesterol is, but I'm going to eat it.
You're just going to look and be like, oatmeal's still good?
But in every shot, there is just like in Fight Club, every shot has a Starbucks cup in the background.
Yeah.
Every shot Quaker of Mal Oats. Has some Quaker Oats in the background. And I really appreciate that. Yeah. Quaker Oats was so committed to getting their name out there, because before this, you were like, I guess I'll just get generic oatmeal. I don't know a brand for oatmeal.
Yeah.
But Nell, everyone was talking about in 1994, Nell and Quaker Oats.
It was the Furby of its era. Ma, I want a can of Quaker Oats for Christmas.
Ma, did you bring that cardboard can of Quaker Oats in here?
What is with the cardboard? Very few things. Planters cheese balls. Quaker Oats. The fake snake.
Oh, yeah. The fake peanut peanuts. Brittle. Yeah.
Peanut brittle. I've never actually seen, I'm sure it did at some point, but I've never seen peanut brittle in a can like that. Just the fake one.
The snakes in the peanut brittle has never worked on me because I don't like peanut brittle. So no. Every time I would just be like, no, thank you. And they're like, you don't want any?
You don't want
like,
this?
No, I'm not familiar with that brand of, what's the brand? Peanut brittle. And I don't really care for it as a snack. So go ahead and just bother someone else. Plus, I saw you cramming some leopard print snakes in that can earlier. So not interested. Thank you.
Would you like Pringles, though? Yeah. Oh, yes.
Of course. Now, that's you got me. The trick. Now, if Pringles could get in on that action, that's where the money is. Not the potato crisps action, but sticking accordion of leopard print snakes.
Everybody knows that
things.
Novelty joke stores are just raking in the dollars.
Yeah. That's what's keeping up this whole economy.
I want to just go ahead and talk about Liam Neeson, because we're going to get to Nell. But
I wrote in my notes that Liam Neeson is a specific looking person. He is neither hot nor ugly, but he is specific.
Do you not think he's a little hot in this movie? I mean,
I feel like... Yes and no. I feel like he contains multitudes. He is the alpha and omega. He could be hot. He could be ugly. I don't know.
Hotandnot.com was his website.
He disturbs me, though, in this movie. His character is a lot. He comes in real hot from the beginning. When he is introduced, he's the local doctor.
Yeah.
A character trope you might recognize from Jeff Daniels in Arachnophobia, the local doctor trope.
Yeah.
We are introduced to him by him telling a woman that she should never send her husband, who is bedridden, according to the earlier scene, she should never send him to a hospital because hospitals are where they just take your money.
No, he said you should only go to the hospital if you get paid to be there, basically. Only if you're a doctor, basically. Okay.
So he's already on my good side in this post-COVID world. I'm like, great, you're a terrific
person.
It's
so weird because...
Also, you're a doctor.
Yeah, it's so weird because, like, and I have this whole thing with anti-vax stuff, too, where I'm like, don't make me defend Big Pharma or, like, because this it's a terrible system, but also, like, don't be an idiot about it.
You can hate them and also still get the fucking vaccine.
Yeah.
The weirdest phenomenon in this movie, and I don't think I've ever encountered this before, in that we have Nell in this movie and Natasha Richardson playing Paula in this.
God rest her soul.
And she, and every woman is constantly talking to Liam Neeson, and he is constantly talking over them. And yes. I feel like the movie inadvertently creates these women who are right constantly, but you can tell the movie wants me to think that Liam Neeson is right. I'm like, no, he should listen to these women. There's a scene where after they've sort of ingratiated themselves to Nell, that whole sentence was, I don't know why that bothered me so much, but it was so bothersome. Natasha Richardson brings up this great point. She's like, "Why? You ever wonder why you're so fascinated by Nell?" She says, "Not exactly a grown woman, is she? Not exactly a threat." And he gets really defensive. He's like, "I'm not interested in her in that way. I'm interested in her for science," or whatever he's saying. And I'm like, I feel like Natasha Richardson's making some really good points. I feel like the character of Liam Neeson isn't into Nell. But I feel like the movie is interested in Nell in a very specific way, and it makes me uncomfortable. And I feel like it is there. I don't think it's entirely this, but there is a part of this movie that is like a straight male fantasy of having a woman who is untouched by society, untouched by other men, who also cannot really communicate, is quote unquote simpler from a simpler time, but also may have mental disabilities. We're not really sure from the movie. It feels icky in a very unspecific, nebulous way, but this movie has an ick factor, as the kids would say, as the kids were all too recently saying.
One thing I want to credit this whole movie for, they do not shy away from the uncomfortableness. They open with it and then just sit there. Because we start with Nell's singing, and then we just stay in that. And I know I'm specifically affected by the way in this movie, but Liam Neeson's character is a more, I think, it's a little more aggravating because he is the protagonist of the film,
yeah.
But he is wrong. Like the relationship that he has with Nell, which works out okay, is very inappropriate. And the way that he gets into it is inappropriate. The way he behaves with the other scientist, why is he even there, is inappropriate in the first place. Because it's like the core at some point says, okay, there's a lot of argument here I'm hearing from both people. There's a court case where they're like, Nell can't be just alone on this. She can't fend for herself. And then another side is saying, yes, she can.
She's basically been fending for herself for a few months.
The judge says, give it 3 months, observe her, and let's see. I need more information.
And the way they observe her is Paula, Natasha Richardson's character, puts a video camera in Nell's bedroom, which is icky in its own right. But then Liam Neeson gets so mad at her for doing that, despite the fact that he's secretly recording Nell.
He just audio
recorded. So it's like, no, you have to do it the way I exploit her.
From him being inside her house.
Correct. And he's constantly, instead of observing her, constantly imposing himself on Nell,
yeah,
making Nell very uncomfortable. And then there's a scene later on where a journalist from the Charlotte Observer, great name because of the observation.
Oh.
He finds out about Nell and he wants to take pictures. And Liam Neeson like attacks him and throws him out of Nell's house. And it was just like, don't you see that this is literally what you were doing an hour earlier in this movie?
Yeah.
And then later, a helicopter from a news program like flies in over Nell's property. And Liam Neeson's so infuriated. I'm like, you did this. This was you just mere minutes ago. It's infuriating. Not to mention, like, throughout the whole movie, Liam Neeson is anti-hospital, and then finally Nell goes to the hospital to get away from all this attention, but also to be observed in a more curated environment. And then the movie's like, Liam Neeson was right the whole time. See, he has to get her out of here. He has to rescue her. It's all very kind of gross. Like, Nell is just this object that is being moved around by everyone else in a disgusting manner.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about this in the intro, and I feel like we were sort of proven right now that we've watched it, in that she has this very childlike demeanor, but also a very, maybe sexual isn't the right word, but she's very sensual.
Sensual, yeah.
In that,
yeah.
What happens in the movie is we discover that Nell's language is kind of like a pidgin English, in that she is speaking a combination of the Southern dialect that she learned from her mother, who had a stroke. And so she had a speech impediment that impeded her enunciation. So that impedes how Nell learned the language. And then Nell also had a twin that died when she was maybe 10. And there was a twin language element to this as well, which creates Nell's unique dialect.
Right. Which is, it's English. It's just not full English, like you said.
But also because she was a twin and because she was from such a very tight-knit community, and by community, I mean three people.
Yeah.
It also means that Nell, whenever she's talking to you, she has to have her hands on your face. She's constantly touching your face, stroking your face, stroking your hair.
I just had chills.
Putting her head on your chest, touching your mouth, touching your eyes. It's very disquieting.
Touchy. She also is just kind of, she's always like feeling the breeze and kind of like swaying and closing her eyes. And it's, again, I think you're right that sensual is a better word for it. It's uncomfortable for me. And maybe that says more about my sensuality than Nell's or Jodie Foster's
portrayal.
Maybe you
need to find the Nell in yourself.
Maybe I've had a little too many Quaker oats, if you know what I mean. But yeah.
She's constantly swaying. She's constantly closing her eyes. She's feeling the wind in her hair. A lot of those things that I don't care for. I just realized, we were talking about this after the movie. She's constantly saying Chick-a-Bay, and she's always saying Tay in the Wind.
We learned Tay in the Wind means tree in the wind.
Okay, like her, we did learn that.
Her and her sister are saying, I'm a little tree in the wind. Like where they're doing.
And Chick-a-Bay, I always thought that we learn is chickadee, like a pet name for someone. like her mom used to call her
Chickadee. I think that's what it is. Chickabee, which is like a similar, it's a play on Chickadee. Like it's,
but I don't think the movie ever explains.
I don't think
Chickadee
so. I think or we're supposed to figure it out. She's like, Paula Chickabee at the end. And Paula's like, yeah.
Yeah, Chickabee. There are several moments where both Liam Neeson and Natasha Richardson start speaking in Nellies. And for some reason, my champagne liberal brain was like, absolutely not. You cannot. That's her. That's her thing. You cannot impersonate her. That is obscene.
It's like if Anakin Skywalker in the prequels started speaking like Jar Jar Binks. It's like, listen, I know Jar Jar Binks isn't technically racist, but it's a little.
We don't have a lot of jellyfish men on this planet.
It's not,
but still
great. And you speaking like that makes it way worse. It's the same. It's the
it's
same
a idea. Third tier. You're handing down through several tiers of racism. I don't like it. I have a question for you.
In what other ways is Nell like Jar Jar Binks? Is that what you're gonna?
This might be related. Actually, okay. Is Nell, to use a now controversial term, is Nell a manic pixie dream girl? Because like the trope of the manic pixie dream girl, she has this unique way of viewing the world, and she teaches our curmudgeonly audience, a surrogate, how to view the world again. Mm. I feel like she is.
I mean, if it's not, it's something similar. And the whole movie is like centered around, like you said, like moving Nell from place.
It's about Nell without ever actually being about Nell. Yeah. It's about Liam Neeson and him yelling at various people. But Nell is there.
Yeah.
Staring closely at the camera.
Well, and Paula and Natasha Richardson is also like fascinated by her by the end too. So it's kind of the same thing. She's
also won over by the magic of Nell.
Yeah. She doesn't just teach.
That fucking sentence too pisses me off.
At first though, I put this fucking lady doctor in here. I really put those words because
You can just call her doctor.
I just meant because they're both technically doctors.
Right.
But yeah.
So it's hard to keep track of who's who. No, I get it.
Dr. Richardson. What is her name? Paula something.
Paula Poundstone.
Dr. Paula Poundstone at first is, we actually do see a character change in her, which is nice. I don't think we actually see much of a character growth in Dr. Lovett. And
no, because he's right.
He just,
because the movie wants me to know that he was right the entire time.
He molds the like story around to like his point of view, including Dr. Paula. And Paula at the beginning is very like, no, this woman needs to be brought into this awful hospital to this awful man I work for, and she's clearly got a mental disability. We need to like take care of her. We need to like sedate her. You know, she's like,
Paula is also committed to being a passive observer. Like she puts the video camera in Nell's room, and she's like, well, it's the only way I can really, you know, be a true observer. Now, yes, her houseboat is with its electricity is floating in the middle of Nell's lake.
With a floodlight.
With a floodlight, very visible from Nell's stoop. But she is trying to make an attempt of like, I just want to observe this woman and see that she's self-sufficient, where Liam Neeson is like, you know what this girl needs?
Me. She needs to touch my face.
I know we're sort of talking in circles, but I wanted to mention some of my favorite Liam Neeson lines that I feel like will really exemplify what a douchebag he is. First off, he goes into every woman's private space that he can find. He goes into Nell's house without permission. He goes into Paula's houseboat, also without permission. Goes through Paula's stuff. No permission yet again. And then Paula's like, aren't you a local doctor? Don't you have patients you need to attend to? And he's like, I got someone to cover me for me. Everyone's replaceable. I'm like, what a wonderful view of the world you have.
Except for me here.
Except for me here, I have to be here for Nell. Oh, and then later when he's in the first courtroom scene, he talks about he's concerned that we're going to care for Nell to death. He doesn't want us to care too much for Nell or we're going to stifle her. And he immediately starts, you know, imposing his will upon Nell as soon as possible. I wrote this down. Can you remind me? I said it says, mind if I talk.
When did he say mind if I talk?
That seems like a weird thing to write. Oh, and then later in another product placement piece, I don't know if it's product placement.
My God. It sure felt like it. We rewound it because it was so
ludicrous. They take Nell into the small town that she's closest to, and they're going shopping for her. Yeah. Natasha Richardson notices that there's a Snickers bar on top of the pile of groceries, and she's like, I'm not getting her this. I'll get back to the accents in a minute. I'm not getting her this. She's never had junk food before. I'm not gonna impose this upon her. And Liam Neeson goes into this half-assed soliloquy about, don't you remember eating your first candy bar as a kid and a Saturday morning tearing open the wrapper and the explosion of sweetness in your mouth? Stop talking. I don't care how much Snickers or Mars Candy Company paid you. This is obscene beyond belief. It's like getting tortillas on the side with a sandwich. It should never happen. You need to stop it.
I'm just imagining a 1994 sophomore going to a theater audition and being like, my name's Stephen Collins. I'll be doing the Snickers monologue from the Academy Award winning movie Nell. And then being like, don't you remember on a Saturday morning tearing off the wrapper to a, he says Milky Way too. You're holding a Snickers.
Same company. Mars was like, we'll let it slide.
Was Snickers not around when he was a kid?
Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know the history of Snickers.
I don't either. Someone look that up.
To Liam Neeson, a Milky Way would be a Mars bar.
Oh, that's right.
He's probably so confused. Not the character of Dr. Lovell, of course. But to Liam Neeson, he's probably like, oh, this world of Nell is so confusing to me.
I have another quote if you
Since
need
I
one.
Already addressed... Oh, please.
So we also have... I do want to talk about this character. There's the character of... So there's the sheriff of the town, and he has his wife, Mary, is... just troubled. We don't really get...
Troubled in a very 1950s movie way where it doesn't seem... The movie doesn't even seem to know what language to give to it. I'm like, it's 1994. We knew what depression was. Maybe we weren't as comfortable talking about it as we might be now, but
yeah,
we knew what it was. Oh, she's got the old gloomies. Yeah. You know Mary. She's just sitting on a curb crying.
I know a doctor who would very much like to get his hands on her. Paula is like the first in-town meeting of Paula and Dr. Lowe. And she comes up and she's like, you know, what's wrong with her? Which also, you're also a doctor. Can you not?
You see a woman just, well, I mean, she don't, did don't, just walk into
don't
a
immediately
scene
diagnose,
like,
but at the same time, like, that's a weird thing for a doctor. But she's like, what's wrong with her? And she says, nothing and everything. You want a list? Life's tough. It's like, what?
I am glad you brought this up because this bothered me. First off, it bothered me one way in that this is a movie trope. This happens all the time. It's not Nell is not the originator of this. But in the previous scene, Liam Neeson tells Natasha Richardson, meet me first thing in the morning. Then we cut to a scene of him at the sheriff's office.
They do say 9 a.m., but...
We cut to the sheriff's office where Liam Neeson is already doing things, which makes it seem to me that it cannot be first thing in the morning because you can't do something before the first thing in the morning because then that's the first thing in the morning. And then anyway, so then he comes out of the sheriff's office. We see Mary with the gloomies and then Paula arrives and he's like, ah, you found me. I'm like, you didn't tell her where to...
You didn't have a place.
You didn't tell her where to meet you?
And she's early.
She's early. Yeah. And... She just goes to the town square of any small town she arrives in and hopes that the person she's meeting there is going to be there as well. Movie, come on.
She's just going to drive around until she sees him.
And then the other thing that bothered me is this, that as an adoptive Southerner, I wasn't born in the South, but I've lived in the South for my entire adult life almost at this point. This felt very condescending to me of Southerners and... Holly weird. I don't want to sound like a Trump voter, but it did feel like a little bit like, yeah, this is what it's like in small towns. Who fucking knows?
Yeah.
Like, plenty of people know. It's not like this. We don't just go everything, nothing, life's tough. Let's go find Nell and not talk to this suicidal woman crying on the curb. I don't know. It felt very condescending and like trying to connect with the common man while also exhibiting that I have no fucking idea what it's like in small town America.
There's a touch of hillbilly elegy to this whole thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like there are people that have very hard Appalachian accents. Like, it's in there. But then there's also It feels a little cartoonish when they kind of come out of nowhere too, where someone is like in Liam Neeson's first scene when he's with the woman with her husband who got
injured square dancing.
Yeah.
Just again, a little condescending. What would a Southerner get injured doing? I know. He'd either spur his own ankle or square dancing. Maybe lasso himself, possibly dislocate a shoulder while lassoing a doggie.
I told him not to spit in the spittoon so hard.
You're gonna throw out your larynx.
So I didn't even hear that he injured himself square dancing.
Yes,
is that
he
true?
Yeah.
He's 87.
He said, no more square dancing.
I thought that was a joke.
And I then, think he injured himself square dancing.
He's basically like, he's 87. He's fucked. Just stay with him. Just spend time with him. And she's like, I ain't a going nowhere. Maybe that's her accent. And like I said, some people do have really extreme accents, but this was just like the way it was like, okay, what are we doing here? And then my other thing, and this is just funny to me. I don't actually think this is that funny. I'm just going to say it. Maybe it makes me sound like an asshole. But in the first scene with Dr. Paula, she's like observing either another doctor or an assistant with a child. And the child is like kind of having a fit.
Slapping himself, biting himself.
Yeah, and she just keeps kind of trying to wrangle him and saying, calm down.
calm down.
And it was just like,
it's all right. Calm down.
I don't think you can just keep saying calm down to this child, but eventually he does calm down.
He does calm down. He sings a song with her.
They sing it.
So I guess, who's the fool now?
I was wrong.
This actress playing a doctor? Or I also liked in this scene, I didn't write it in my notes, but it was one of my favorite awkward movie moments where when we first meet Natasha Richardson's character, she's like, this is Diane, my assistant. And then Diane looks up, nods silently, and then continues working. And I'm like, that is what we call a featured extra. I don't have any lines, so they don't have to pay me as much.
But I did get a name.
I did get a name, and I got to nod, and the camera was on me with Natasha Richardson. Mom, look, I'm in 1994's Nell.
I'm in the internet movie database as Diane.
Diane. The assistant.
The assistant. Do you agree with evil doctor?
God, this evil doctor. Can we talk about him real quick?
Yeah.
He's introduced first talking about, he doesn't call them feral children. He calls them wild children.
Wild children, which is a thing.
And he immediately wants Nell brought to his hospital.
Yeah.
And then he rubs his hands together, and then he's silhouetted by the moon, and
he goes,
and I'm like, something.
I don't know about this guy.
No, I don't know, sir. You seem skullduggerous, I'll tell you that. He is our villain.
Yeah.
The evil doctor, the embodiment of science, which we all know is the true killer. It keeps telling us what we died from. Doesn't that seem suspicious to you? We can't all be dying from heart attacks, can we?
Science is the culprit.
Who told me I had a heart disease? Science. Who told me I had high cholesterol? Science. Who told me I should be eating more Quaker oats? Science! So eventually he gets Nell to his Tower of Barad-dûr in Mordor and it lures her in with treats and Snickers or whatnot, sedates her, and then Nell goes silent. And then he also testifies against Nell. He wants to keep her in his chambre de evil. I mean, it plays into this whole, like, I don't want to call this movie anti-science, but I don't know what other term to call it except, like, remember the good old days when we'd all just be chopping logs and we didn't have to worry about evil scientists in big cities like Charlotte, North Carolina, trying to steal our women. This whole thing left a bad taste in my mouth. The evil scientist topped it off.
He does say at some point, I want to know what you think on this. He says, everyone who cares for someone has an ulterior motive. Ulterior motive. So
I've never heard even a James Bond villain say anything as villainous as that.
You're thinking when you care for your elderly grandmother. I mean, I guess
you want that sweet will money.
I guess. Yeah. You know, maybe he is right. Mm-hmm. It's a very cynical view of humanity, that's for sure.
I mean, I guess it does point him out as a villain.
I'm a villain. We kept saying that
every
time. What
can I say? I'm a villain. I did write down, Natasha Richardson at one point says a line that could sum up the entire movie, which made me laugh outright, which was, what are we going to do about Nell? This movie is 2 hours of people saying, what are we going to do about Nell? And Liam Neeson yelling at them.
It was originally based on a play called We Need to Talk About Nell.
And they were like, that's too catchy. Let's name it Idioglossia.
Idioglossia. Do you want to talk about Natasha Richardson
and the accents?
Sure.
First off, no one talks like a normal person in this movie. Nell, which is the plot, so I'm not going to fault her for it.
That's not
Liam Neeson. Liam Neeson, and you've already criticized me for it, but Liam Neeson is a talented actor. He is a very specific-looking actor, as I've already said. He's not a non-Irish actor, even when he's playing a character who grew up in the United States. Yes, from Irish parents, but it's still a little distracting.
Or when he grew up on Coruscant or whatever, as Qui-Gon Jinn, he's still Irish.
Or when he was, you know, a businessman in Germany, he was still Irish. And then Natasha Richardson is also English.
I'm just imagining the letters we're going to get about what planet he's actually from in
Please, reach out. Where is Qui-Gon Jinn from? I really want to know, says the guy who knows Sauron's tower's name. I did say that Natasha Richardson is also English. I shouldn't have said that. Ireland is not England. She is English. She acquits herself much better. She's doing a very strong Southern accent, a very like Reba, a housewife who works two jobs, like that type of accent. Who loves her kids with all her heart. I can't sing anymore, as we all know from the 15-year-old who is my lawyer. I can't sing more than 30 seconds of any song. But she's doing that type of accent, like, what are we going to do about Neil? Like,
I'm sorry, who's Neil? What are we talking about?
Neil, is that another person who lives in Nell's cabin? Neil?
Are you in here?
She does a good job, but it's such an overwhelming accent that it was just like, this is too much. We can't all have fun accents. Someone's got to have the normal accent. And then the evil scientist came in. He's like, I believe you were talking about me. I'm like, no, you're a different thing altogether. And then there was the sheriff, who was just basically Foghorn Leghorn, who's like, well, I was knee-high to a June bug when I was driving up here yonder. And it's like, okay, everyone...
Slap tits on me and call me Dolly Parton.
You can't all be colorful. We have to have one baseline to judge everyone else against. We just can't have everyone being wackadoo. Pepe Le Pew walking in here. Anyway, can we talk about Jodie Foster? I don't feel like we've talked about Jodie Foster as now. I feel like Jodie Foster in this movie, I'm going to use a word I've never used before, so it's going to make me sound very pretentious. I'm going to risk sounding pretentious.
You know what? Roll the dice.
I think she gives a very arresting performance.
Okay.
Prove me wrong. I think she does a very specific...
It does make me feel like I'm going to be arrested watching it. Sure.
Like, should I be watching this?
Right.
Your Honor, it was released in theaters.
I think it's legal.
I feel like it's a better performance than the rest of this movie. And I feel like because this movie is so melodramatic, and I feel like because this movie is melodramatic, her performance outshines the movie it's in. And so it comes off looking kind of silly, like because of the environment it's in and the histrionic attitude of the script, I feel like her performance is kind of a joke. I was telling a person today at work who was asking me what my plans were for the weekend, and I said, this. And she's like, what's Nell? And I'm like, I think she was born in 19, she might actually be 10 years my junior. But she's like, what's Nell? And I'm like, okay, well, we didn't have the language for it at the time, but I think this movie is more of a meme than an actual movie. Like, I think people around my age remember what Nell is more than what Nell is about.
Right.
Like, everyone my age, if I went up to them and said, Chick-a-bay, tay, and a ween, they're like, Nell. And I'm like, but remember the courtroom scene? And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? By coincidence, another coworker texted me, and she referenced Nell. And I'm like, you are not going to believe this. I'm watching it on Friday. And she was like, why?
Because Chick-a-bay, tay, and a ween.
Just tay, and a ween, skew, and a bowie. See, I told you I didn't say I wasn't going to impersonate her. Yes, it feels wrong, but it is kind of fun.
Yeah. No, I was
skew into belly. Say it. Skew into belly.
I can't.
Skew into belly.
I can't.
Okay. All right.
I want to bring up Tyler's point about that, about laughing at her performance.
Yes. My boyfriend also watched it with us.
Yeah, we watched it together.
As usual, he did not appreciate our jokes.
Yes.
Our japes.
Tyler made me feel very bad. But in an insightful way, we watched this with our partners, and Tyler made the point that this movie, and I don't know if he was defending the movie so much as saying, kind of describing that the way that we are approaching it makes it feel like we're seeing something that's different and we're laughing at it as if it's a joke.
Right.
And I don't think that's entirely wrong to say, but I also don't think that's, it wasn't directed at me per se, but like, criticism accepted.
Right. He was looking directly at me when he said it. So,
but just to defend it, I do feel like it's over the top. And it's over the top. Basically, I'm kind of disagreeing with you because I think it's over the top.
Oh, okay.
In context, which mm-hmm. is what you're saying, is that maybe it's like too good for this movie. But I think it's over top in a vacuum as well.
Okay.
I mean, it's hard to say. Like, what I've never.
It is hard to say because I don't know what the hell this is.
Yeah. But it is very, the reason this movie makes me cringe so much is a very like visceral feeling, very like touchy, very lots of close-up shots of now when she's doing these things and
this
acting.
This movie very much, the only thing I can say about this movie in comparison to Silence of the Lambs is one, they both have performances by Jodie Foster. And two, they do use close-ups as a motif. Now, some might argue that Silence of the Lambs uses it more effectively. Who could say? But this movie is, you are always inches away from everyone's face.
Yeah. It is very...
In fact, I felt myself like pushing into
back.
Your couch
yeah.
so that I didn't have to be so close to Oscar Schindler's fucking mug all the time.
Yeah, just very, they get right in there with the camera.
Absolutely. I see what you're saying, and it is hard to gauge. I do feel like she is doing something very specific. It feels very, I mean, you can see like she is, when she's performing, she is dropping her lip on one side, which is something you would imagine if she learned her language from
right.
someone who had suffered from a stroke, she might do. There's a lot going on, and it feels like she put a lot of work into it, and I want to say, bully on you, Nyad, or whatever your character's name was. You did it. You did it again, Panic Room. But
he did it again, one of the cops from True Detective.
You've done it again.
Night Patrol or whatever.
I believe your name was Jennifer Flight Plan in that movie.
Heir to the Flight Plan fortune.
But it feels very silly because it's so passionate.
We talked about in Batman... And Robin,
yes,
we spoke about recently.
We did talk about that.
We talked about how the campiness doesn't work in like a big budget movie.
Right.
Like it makes it feel kind of disconnected. So maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe we've got like a hot
rod. Oh, you think she's doing high camp? She's doing a drag
performance. No. I'm saying it's similarly disconnected.
She's serving Nell.
She's serving Nell. Nell is, Jodie
yes,
Foster is serving
Nell. Clackety, clackety, clack. Yes, I get it.
I'm not allowed to say that.
No,
that's
those
are your
words. I want to say something else. Now that you brought up Tyler, I feel like he would get mad at me if I didn't bring this up. He felt like this was a metaphor on colonialism because we had Liam Neeson and Paula Poundstone come in. They sort of foist themselves.
Paula Poundstone.
Dr. Paula. They foist, lady doctor. They foist themselves on Nell. They sort of decide, no, we can give her a better life.
Yeah.
She's not self-sufficient. Look, she's just chopping wood and eating oatmeal. What? And then they're like, what if we take her to the bright lights, big city of Charlotte, the Great White Way, as they call it, for a different kind of way. And they sort of force civilization upon her, or their idea of civilization upon her. I appreciated that. I don't feel like that was the creator's intent. I think it's an interesting metaphor, and I think it's an interesting like read on the movie. I feel like this movie is very anti-civilization. I feel like the movie's attitude is very anti-progress, anti-civilization. The movie ends with a great big get-together on Nell's property with Liam Neeson, Paula Poundstone, their kid, their epilogue conceived kid, and as well as the sheriff, Mary, who now can smile again because Nell was the magic she needed. As we all know, someone who's suffering from depression just needs to meet a feral woman.
Just need to have your face touched.
Face touched and passionate eye contact, as well as like a few of the other characters we met through the movie. And they're having like this get together, but like on Nell's property, they have to march out there. Nell is self-sufficient. She's living on her own. And it's sort of, I feel like the movie is sort of like taking an askance at courts, hospitals, science, psychology, medicine, like all these things, like, you don't need that crap. You just need to eat oatmeal in the woods and have a Snickers bar once in a while. That I found like very off-putting to me.
I don't know if I think for sure that the movie was intending to be an allegory for colonialism, but I do think that's an interesting read. Nell is the people of North Sentinel Island. And Liam Neeson is that one Christian missionary kid
who Mormon got arrowed
to death. But I did make the mistake of reading about Idioglossia.
Yeah.
And the playwright, at least in one quote, who knows, like, it's not like I read his autobiography or anything, or like what, but at some point he gave the quote that he and his family had moved to Cascade Mountains and it was like really rough in it and he couldn't handle it. And so they moved back to somewhere. And
Charlotte.
I don't think that. Anyway, and he was like, "I just wanted to write a story about someone who could survive out there, unlike me." And it was like, seems like there's more to it than that.
Seems like you wanted to write a story about a woman who's not exactly a grown woman, is she? Not exactly a threat, to quote Paula Poundstone.
My last thing is the courtroom scene. I don't know if you want to get there. Or not.
Yeah, let's do that. That can be our little cherry on top.
Okay. The whole thing, the 3-month period of observation is over, and now they're appearing back in court. She's already been taken into the hospital because it kind of, the reporters showing up in helicopters, scaring Nell, kind of forced the issue. And they're like,
and that alters her and Liam Neeson's relationship in that she goes completely quiet. She won't respond to him.
Because she's been sedated, for one.
She's been sedated, but it's also a metaphor because she like talked to him. They were communicating, right. And now she won't talk.
Yeah. She won't talk to him, and it's killing him. I wish you would just talk to me, because remember, this is about me.
Dr. Nell, or whatever my character's name is. Dr. Lovell.
Dr. Nell Lovell Nell. So they go to the courtroom, and basically the judge is meant to decide, does Nell get to live out her life in some capacity on her property that she owns?
Her inherited property.
Or does she need to be, I don't know, a ward of the state or something, and put away or put in treatment? They're having this discussion or a court case, and Liam Neeson keeps getting up and talking in a way that would not fly in any courtroom.
Having, you know, read a lot of the summaries of the Trump courtroom scenes, I feel like that's perfectly fine and no one will ever shut you up if you just keep talking out of turn in a courtroom.
But then Nell gets up and the judge does let her try to speak, or she does speak, but he doesn't understand what she's saying, understandably. And so then she asks.
She calls for a sidebar. She's like, a sidebar, the judge.
A point of order.
I'm just a simple country woman. Your cameras frighten me, but I must insist.
Now, I all of a sudden, she has suspended. Yes. I've been in the woods for now 30 years.
I make my own seersucker suits.
I darn my own seersucker socks.
Where'd you get that bow, that straw boater? How are you? Are you Huey Long suddenly?
So she speaks through Dr. Lovell and has this very kind of poetic thing where she's basically like, there are people in the world and don't worry about me. It's a little broken, but you can understand why that would be the case. But it is also very eloquent for what we know about Nell's speaking ability so far. It is basically a closing argument that Nell makes for herself, despite never having spoken in public, having spoken to anyone except for two people
never
in that courtroom.
Never seen this many people in one place before in her life, as far as we understand.
And it's ludicrous.
It is absolutely insane. It puts Miracle on 34th Street to shame in the absolute ludicrous understanding of how the American judicial system... 3,400 letters, all addressed to Nell. Like, that's how I expected this to end. There's no reason why this would happen. And she basically said, and it's also, again, a bit condescending. She's like, I'm a simple mind and I don't under, I'm a small mind. I'm a small person. I don't understand your big, crazy city ways. It's very like country mouse nonsense. It's very kind of sickening, like the idea that people who live in smaller communities, even though, I mean, Nell's is very as small as it can get, it's still a little rude to me, like the way that these old fucking Hollywood writers are treating like that we're all just country bumpkins with no
Damon,
shoes.
Just say Jewish. You know you want to say it.
No. I just, I found it all very condescending.
Yeah, no, it is. It's, the whole movie is weird, but this is the most cartoonish thing that it does, which is just like, I mean, I don't know how I would end this movie, so I guess good try, but it's
I love
ridiculous.
A courtroom scene, don't get me wrong, and now that I remember, I feel like I will never forget this courtroom scene.
I can't believe that I forgot it. It was completely wiped from my memory of this movie.
I remembered that she went to the hospital. I remembered she goes to the big city. I did not remember that she delivers a crowd-pleasing closing argument. Mr. Smith goes to Washington, like shuts the whole thing down, inherits the wind. Nothing can put a pin in old Nell Beaubaton. I don't know where I'm going with this. Just started saying words. But it's absolutely insane.
Nell Kelty. Her last
Nell
name Kelty. I remember
that. There is part of me that was like, I appreciated the audacity of like, you know what would be perfect for this Nell movie? If she delivers a monologue in her Nellies for Liam Neeson to translate on the spot.
We mentioned this before, but when he translates for her, it's Nell doing the Nellies and then Liam kind of figuring out what she's saying and repeating. But then he also has to translate for her. And that's very upset. Anytime our other characters speak in Nellies, it's just...
That's not for
same,
you.
It's the same thing. Just like, don't.
It's like seeing Chet Hanks doing a Jamaican patois. Like, don't do that. That's uncalled for.
I think we're ready for the verdict.
Yeah, we are definitely ready.
Let's go. Chet Hayes in my head. Just
oh yeah, who wouldn't?
I don't know any of his songs.
Neither
Damon.
Neither is Chet Hayes. Yes.
What is your verdict?
This is an audacious movie. This is an ambitious movie. This movie has thoughts, but I think this is You're in a Child is an Idiot. This feels like a very Oscar-baity movie. And even before I looked up the date of its release, the month date of its release, which was limited release in December, which if you follow movies, that is movie-ies for please let me have an Oscar. It is very highfalutin. It's very up its own ass. I think one of the greatest ironies that I think I'll take away from this movie, like we mentioned, is that it thinks that we should side with Liam Neeson, and I sided with everyone who was not Liam Neeson. All the women were constantly telling him to leave them alone or to maybe think, have some retro introspection about what you're doing. Why are you so fascinated with this simple woman from the country who cannot speak, who you cannot understand, who swims naked in her own lake, and then later you get naked in that lake? How do we not address that?
Oh my God, we forgot about
that. Showed her his skew. He showed her his skew.
Yeah, we got to get back in there. So I guess finish... Do you want to finish your whole thing?
I mean, can we just work it in here?
Let's just talk about it. Okay.
Don't work in a skew against someone's will. That's why I asked you if it's okay to put it in here.
Consent. That's called consent. Nell is swimming naked, and she's done that.
That's
once
something
before.
She does almost every night in this.
Which
movie.
They're at one point very shocked by for some reason. She comes out at night, and they're all like, like she's a deer that they haven't been observing
been
her
watching.
Every.
She hasn't left this fucking property. And then another instance of women in the movie telling Liam Neeson, Paula says, we shouldn't be watching her like this. Yeah. What does Liam Neeson do?
He sits down to watch her better.
He says, why not? She's beautiful. And then he's like, he says he doesn't. Oh, it's gross. It's weird. They need to get her comfortable with men, I guess. Well, what is the
maybe
reason?
We should unpack this, because maybe we should go back into the non-verdict area, because the reason that her mom left society,
that's
right. Find out.
Oh my god, we missed so much of this movie.
She was
shouldn't have thrown my notes across the room.
She was raped.
Yeah,
and so she decided she got pregnant from that rape with Nell and her twin sister, and she didn't want that to befall her two girls, so she absconded from society and raised these two girls on her own and taught them to not come outside during the day, kept them secrets from anyone that they even might encounter in their isolated property. Nell has a fear of going outside during the daylight, and she taught them, she read to them from the Bible and taught them that men are evildoers. And the skew in the belly is the skewer in the belly, which she means as the act of rape, the penis skewering her in the belly. It's very fucked up.
It is, and we didn't really touch on the
and
fact.
And so Liam Neeson's like, you know what the perfect solution to this is? Me swimming naked with her and showing her my penis.
Me, the scientist observer in this.
Yeah, I'm just a, you know, unrelated third party. I'm not invested in this at all.
God.
I just watch her swim at night, and now I'm going to swim with her naked. It's not sexual or weird or anything.
We also didn't talk about the fact that part of Nell's whole thing is she's sort of in a state of arrested development, the condition, not the show or the band, because her twin sister died. Her body's just like in a tree, like her skeleton.
Yeah, they buried her. Yeah.
And she
goes to visit her.
She goes to visit her. And that was like part of the reason that she's kind of traumatized, in addition to her upbringing with her mother. So,
and we should also mention that Natasha Richardson, when she first sees Nell, does mention that she might have some mental limitations, some mental disabilities.
Yeah. But we never really find out one way or another.
True. I felt like that was the movie going, this is what it is.
Yeah. Right.
So I felt like that was the movie answering the question.
Yeah.
Fuck this. You're in a shell as an idiot. I don't like this. This whole movie has a layer of ick on it. And I keep thinking about The Breakfast Club and how I was lenient on that. And I keep volleying back and forth on whether I should have been lenient on The Breakfast Club or not. But this is like an example of like, no, this movie is just icky all over.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like this movie. Although I'll never forget Nell's rousing closing argument.
I just want to ask you, when you say this movie was ambitious, what do you mean by that?
I feel like this movie was trying for something, and there could have been a good movie in this movie's premise. But I feel like this movie just sort of got caught up in something I wasn't interested in. I was genuinely interested. The parts that I think get closest to a good movie are the parts where they're sort of watching Nell and investigating her language. And they sort of, Natasha Richardson has like, starts figuring out what these words are. And she's like, this is actually English. She's speaking in sort of this piece together English. Those parts were interesting. And then just the evil scientists in Charlotte and the courts and all this nonsense just felt like stupid. And I felt like the movie wasn't all that interested in Nell outside of Nell being a metaphor for something. I mean, just like the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, like trope, it's not about Nell. It's about how Nell can make Liam Neeson more of a central character.
Yeah.
Get fucked, Nell, the movie.
And if you want to, Nell the person, but only...
That's up to you, up to Nell you. The person. Yeah. I'm talking about Nell the movie, 1994, director Michael Apted. What do you think, DJ?
I want to quote one of the great philosophers of our time, and I don't even have to look at my notes, but this movie is dumb. Quote Damon Xanthopoulos.
He sounds smart.
It's got a Lifetime movie vibe or a Hallmark movie vibe. Like, it feels underbaked overall. Like, the uncomfortableness. Jodie Foster's performance makes me uncomfortable, but that's not the only thing that makes me uncomfortable. Her making me uncomfortable is kind of like, this is a choice she made about how to play this character, or that, you know, the filmmakers with her made to play this way. And I think she does a good job with that choice. That choice makes me uncomfortable. And I don't think that's necessarily unintended, because, you know, it's different. As Tyler pointed out, it's me, my like DJ, being uncomfortable with something that I'm encountering that's
you
different.
You need to unpack your nail issues.
Right, yeah. I do think that is my issue. I do still think it's funny to you and you, or to our listeners and to Damon.
You don't know if it's funny to our listeners yet.
I mean, hopefully.
Don't
we'll
speak
see.
For them.
We'll see. So you can laugh at my cringing at the movie. That's fine. But it does, the movie overall doesn't sort of come together in a way that makes that work for me. I think you're right in that there maybe is a good movie in here somewhere, but it's kind of weird. And I don't think actually Liam Neeson's acting is fine. I think Natasha Richardson, God rest her soul, her acting is fine. She gets a wet t-shirt contest scene too.
Ugh, another scene where I'm like, come on, movie.
I think it was unnecessary.
Can you be chill for 5 minutes, movie?
It's kind of necessary. I think it was, you know, it was a male gaze thing. It was like, that lets you know that Natasha Richardson is hot and he thinks so too.
Right.
So they're going to get together. And then
the two prettiest people in this movie are going to fuck at some
really
point.
The two only
Hollywood math. The
only two non-nail people in this movie are going to get together. It's just not well done. And it's weird and dumb, and it's just there's lots of weird directing choices too, like some weird like zoom ins. The close shots, I guess I can sort of understand that's like
a choice.
It's a choice, but the zoom ins are just like, it's weird stuff. There, it's not as bad as like Cutting Edge, where it was just like, what's happening? But it did make me go, I think this is not very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're in a child's an idiot. Sorry. All right.
And sorry to my psychology teacher / girls volleyball coach. It's fine. You probably shouldn't have spent an entire class day spent watching Nell. Possibly two, if I remember how short our class periods were. Not cool, unnamed coach.
Do you have hatred for Damon's high school teacher who let him watch movies in class? Get in the comments. Let us know.
We should be learning.
What do you think, everybody? Email us, yourinnerchildisanidiot@gmail.com. You can text us or leave us a voicemail, 615-576-0525. Take our listener survey and you can get a recap, our 2023 recap episode. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's our best.
I definitely remember recording it, and I think it's one of our best 2023 recaps we did.
You can go to the link in the description and get your free episode. If you want to become a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/yourinnerchildsanidiot. We want to thank our current patrons, including
Lil Miss Chicken Nugget,
Just Cuz,
Lindsay Halleck,
Scalphosaurus,
Jonathan Day,
Dramatically Placed Hot Dog,
Caroline Amberson,
Tay Smith,
Particle Man,
I can't do it, Travis Vance,
Dr. Malcolm's heaving bosom.
The Loose Fan Gromkin.
Well, I can't do it as Nell, because like then you wouldn't understand me.
Yeah.
And the whole point is that I say your name at the end of the thing. Beth Sermont.
Josh Frigo.
James Taylor.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard.
Karen Curd.
Damon's Australian accent.
The supreme ruler of this podcast.
Shit on the cartouche.
Larissa Maestro.
Bill Haynes.
The Hands of Fate.
Jackson Has an Unhealthy Obsession with Damon.
Zachary Hartley.
The Zesty. Sorry.
Lindsay Nell.
Heather Tuggle.
His Honor the Mayor.
David Moore.
Tommy Boy is my... Actually, this one I will do in Nell. Tommy Boy, my favorite movie.
And just to interpret for him, he was saying Tommy Boy is his favorite movie.
I was also giving a rousing speech in my own defense of my own land.
He also somehow gave a 1 million word dissertation on discovering of the quark.
I also did the Sunday New York Times crossword puzzle in that same sentence. It's pretty amazing. She's a great woman.
And of course, last but not least, Jeremy T. Powell. And thank you all very much for supporting the show. If you want to support like them, patreon.com/yourinnerchildsanidiot.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Is that how we usually end it? Goodbye.